So we had to go ahead and break for just a second so that we could end our on-air segment, because I only am allowed so much time and I can't cut into Amy Goodman. She comes on the show after I do with Democracy Now, and you would much rather listen to Amy Goodman than me pontificate. Not Jacob. I know you would rather hear his beautiful radio voice talking for a very long time.
Cat Sabotage, you do yourself a disservice demeaning yourself like this.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I like to demur. Depur. Oh, goodness. I'm going to just throw me out with the bathwater on that one. Anyway, we were talking about your wages and what you're making and how you would like to supplement your income. I know that you are also a photographer and a graphic designer. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the work that you've been doing on that. So what have you been working on? Any projects lately?
So currently the projects are going to be personal, with goals to make them public. Currently building my portfolio, currently building my skills. Thankfully, working with some buddies of mine who are actually in the design and photography industry here locally in Spokane. Want to shout them out, but I don't want to give away their names, just for security.
Yeah, sure.
But right now, the big project I have in mind is actually to put together a photography book of a recent road trip that I did all around the Sierra Nevadas, to put it very, very basically. So one detail I don't think we covered on here is that I am also a motorcyclist. I ride around on my Harley Davidson Sportster. Yeah, you know, girl's bike, whatever. It got me 2,500 miles around on the trip and 7,500 miles everywhere else.
I have mad respect for you riding your motorcycle, because it's something I've always wanted to do. But I've been cautioned by people who are experienced riders that if you did not grow up doing it, don't jump on a road bike right away. Get on a dirt bike, go out, do the thing, which I've done several times. But I'm terrified of what people do while they're driving. Like, I see so many people texting and stuff. Like, it terrifies me to get on a piece of an engine, straddle it between my legs, and then just hope that the lady behind me is going to stop. That's me from myself. I don't know if you agree with that assessment or what I've heard from people.
I do agree with that assessment. I do agree with that sentimentality, but the difference is how you approach that ideal, and frankly that fact. Because what I've learned getting my motorcycle license, is that it's not necessarily that you are the bad driver, because if you were a bad motorcyclist, you wouldn't get a license. It's really everybody else around you who is not used on. Let's be generous and say they are not used to seeing motorcycles, they are not used to hearing motorcycles, and not used to driving around them. They're used to driving around other 1.5, 2.5 ton metal machines, metal cages that protect them all. And that is part of the fun, is the risk of doing that. On to another point I wanted to make. You had people, as you said before, say if you want to get into motorcycles, you had to have go on dirt bikes for years beforehand, or however long beforehand, get used to that, get onto the road. I didn't do that. I was a BMX bicyclist when I was a very little kid. I rode my bicycle around. I walked. My main mode of transportation was a car. And then I learned how to ride a motorcycle because I was infatuated with the idea of riding a motorcycle.
Oh, me too, man.
Yeah.
You heard that song by, have you heard that song by Arlo Guthrie?
I don't think so, no.
I can't just conjure it up in my brain like that, but it's basically...
Sing it louder, baby.
Yeah, I can't, but there's a song by Arlo Guthrie, and it's called Motorcycle. Just wanna ride on my motorcycle. I don't want a pickle, just wanna ride on my motorcycle. It's a great, great song for anybody.
Do that. Well, first off, when is your album coming out?
years away.
Yeah, one or two. If you really take your time. Yeah. Anyway, no, I haven't listened to that.
The record label can call me.
Yeah, well, you already work for the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I haven't listened to that just yet, but I know what I'm listening to tonight, after this is all over. But anyway, again, the joy is the risk, the joy is the absolute freedom and the connection that you have with the road, and the fact that you're more connected to the world going 80 miles per hour or however fast you want to go, within reason,
please,
young listeners who are probably thinking of getting onto two wheels and not used to it just yet, keep it under 100 at least. Speaking from experience. Anyway.
There's a story there.
It's not a big story. I just, you know, went like 110, 114 on my bike and said, all right, so that's how fast I can go. And I slowed right up.
Okay.
All yeah. Right. Amazing, interesting, mind-blowing story, I know. But anyway, going back to what I was talking about before is...
Sierra Nevadas.
Bringing it back to the motorcycle thing is my family are motorcycle riders. My grandfather is and my father is, you know, two separate sides of my family. My grandfather unfortunately isn't able to really ride long distance anymore, if at all anymore. So my intention was I was going to take this road trip anyway, you know, just travel around, go around Pacific Coast Highway, through California, just explore around, take a bunch of pictures, and then, you know, loop back over to Spokane after visiting some family over in Salt Lake City. But once I realized that my grandfather couldn't really ride anymore, I decided, well, I'm going to be taking pictures anyway. I'm going to make this into a book. I'm going to keep a little journal, which unfortunately I haven't written into every single day. But I'm going to keep a little journal. I'm going to write down my thoughts for the day. You know, any sort of lessons I learned during the time. And put it into a book, give it to my grandfather, so hopefully he can live vicariously through my short 2,500-mile trip. And I say short because I've listened to stories from these guys. They say, oh yeah, I've traveled across the country 3 months at a time, 6 months at a time, whatever it was.
Sounds awesome.
It does. It is awesome and also kind of horrifying at the same time. Because there is a joy in the road. There is a sheer happiness, and if I could use this term again, euphoria in riding around on the road, being at risk with, and the only things you have is the money in your pocket, whatever you saved up, and whatever clothes you decided to bring with you, plus your tools. And I highly recommend you take tools with you, whether you're in a motorcycle or a car or a boat.
Something.
Yeah, if you have something that needs tools, take tools.
PSA.
Yeah, PSA. Brought to you by Cat Sabotage.
And Jacob Powley.
Yeah, the sweet JP. Anyway, so going back to what I was saying earlier is I took this road trip. I took all these pictures. I'm still going through them right now. I took well over 4,000 photos, I want to say. Just going through them, picking out ones that are, say, too blurry or too out of focus, because since I was going on this trip and I only had about 2 and a half weeks to actually make this trip, is a lot of my pictures were taken while I was on the motorcycle riding, hand on the throttle, and other hand wrapped around my DSLR camera and taking pictures from my chest, and occasionally, if the road was straight enough and there was nobody on there, ideally, but not always, I would then look at the road through the tiny viewfinder of my camera, and that is very dangerous, folks. Do not recommend unless you are really good at it.
Apparently, you're very good at it.
It's
a little wild.
No, I'm just very confident.
Okay, all right.
But anyway, I took all these pictures. I'm going to develop them out. I'm going to make this book. But another idea I had while coming up with this idea is, well, these are actually pretty damn decent photos. Pardon my French. So I want to publish maybe a handful of these books. Sell them to my friends. Maybe have a few more copies, like a stack of copies, that I would just sell generally. Publish these photos, go around town, go to other places around here that would hang up artwork. And I do recommend you do this if you are a creative, is ask cafes, ask restaurants. Go anywhere you like and say, hey, I have some creative works that I want to hang and I want to show. Can I do so? And, you know, talk to them. So, anyway, back to me. Big old me, the real star of the show. I can't say that with a straight face.
I saw it crack it up as it left your mouth.
So I want to produce these pictures. I want to hang them up. I want to sell them. And I want to see if there's any interest in them or if there's anywhere I can improve. So then I could probably make, if not a good side gig, then hopefully a career out of it. Mm-hmm. Because the one thing I have always wanted to do ever since I found out that I was bad at marine biology is, yeah, I found that out when I was in high school, thankfully. So I didn't have to go into debt for that. But I always said, well, I want to draw pictures for a living. I want to make pictures for a living because it's something I really enjoy. And to this day, I think I'm pretty good at it. Not, you know, still working on the confidence to show it to the mass public and expose it to criticism, as, you know, every creative, I think, is familiar with.
Very much.
Yeah. But I do want to make that my career. Now, as happenstance, to bring it back to what we were talking about earlier, I also really like bartending. I really like making drinks. I really like talking to people, and we've talked about that to death and a half. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if photography doesn't 100% work, which I still kind of hope it does, I am completely satisfied with doing that and bartending. But the thing is, with, to bring it back to the point of this entire show, is that with today's economy, with today's climate, political, emotional, however you want to spin it, is that it is very hard to make a decent living, to have a house, to have health care, to have groceries, to have food on the table, to care for others in a, you know, even in a financial sense, at least, without working at least more than one job. And I think that's exactly what most people will have to do.
And more people increasingly do. The gig economy has been mentioned time and time again in the media. They've talked about, and you know, Uber and those other kind of gig works workers and that those kinds of jobs, excuse me, have been the target of labor organizers. For that very reason, because they're often contracted employees, 1099, and don't really take home much of the profit. Meanwhile, the company is taking home billions of dollars in square profit, and people are having to do these jobs and work just to survive, where one should be sufficient to some people. Some people think, no, you know, whatever, screw it, your lot is your lot. If that's what you have to do, then you have to do it, and you should just be grateful. And I think it's a little fatalistic to say that. I think it's a little myopic. It doesn't factor in the general idea that the economy's not working. Yeah. If you have to work multiple jobs full time to live, you just can't. I mean, and if you have a population that is spending so much of their time working, they're also not spending money on recreation. They're not spending money on the arts. They're not spending money on any of those other things. And so they suffer. Mm-hmm. And really, workers just want a fair shake. Nobody here is asking for, they're asking for decent pay for honest work. They're not asking for enough pay to get a jet, you know, or something else. And, you know, If you're lucky enough to have one of those jobs that you can work full time and supports you and you love it and you love what you do, you're one of those rare folks. More power to you. And just try and get as many people as you can and hoist them up on that boat with you. Don't kick ladders down as you go up it.
I'm gonna need to keep that phrase, actually. I'm gonna need to write it down after we're done with this interview. But a few points I do want to touch on after you said that. I do want to go back to the clearest one in my mind at the moment, what you said, the criticism to people who say, oh, well, I'm doing this job for 30, 50 plus years, which, hey, power to you. Like, you're doing something that I currently can't at 27 years old.
Right. They're
saying that people who are flipping burgers are making more than I think they should. Well, why do people think that folks who are working a job, you know, full-time for the most part, making minimum wage to be able to afford food, housing, so on and so forth, why do you think that they deserve less than a minimum livable wage? And that is, from my understanding, that is the point of a minimum wage, is minimum livable wage, where you can get housing, where you can get food, clothes, cleaning supplies for yourself and everything else you have, and be able to live comfortably without in poverty.
I couldn't agree more with that statement. I mean, that's, and you know, for whatever reason, I've never just put that together. So you put that together for me, which is embarrassing a little bit with as much as I've thought about this, but I have thought it's the bare minimum that you need to survive and to live. And we should not be encouraging people to work in starvation conditions. Yeah. And then you wonder.
It's immoral, in my opinion.
It is. It is immoral. And there is a morality associated with and an ethical problem with employing people and not paying them enough to live or to survive, especially when you're making, you know, several times what that worker is making and can afford several houses and several properties. And that's what we're seeing is people with several houses, properties, you know, there is one class that does very, very well, and they can amass those things, and the property and all of those assets, the stocks, all of it is concentrating in their hands, and the vast majority of workers get none of that.
Yeah. And it's really weird when you think about, like, yeah, there are rich people on this planet, and they flaunt their cash, whatever, but you also have rich people who are not only multimillionaires, which, at least from what I understand, the layman would probably never really see in their lifetime.
Right.
You have multimillionaires, which
and
is one thing.
Want it.
Well, here's the other thing. You have billionaires. Billionaires.
With a B.
Yeah. Big B.
Big B.
Real big B. To where their wealth is so massive that it is nebulous at best to everybody else. Like, how is it that you can work a singular job, commit to it as hard as, say, you know, Mikey does flipping burgers over at McDonald's, and then become a multi-billionaire? Let's be nice and say clever finagling, clever working of the current economy and putting your money into places to where it can gain more money, being very smart and foxy about it, if that term makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, then you could make a lot of money, multimillionaires, or just straight up millionaires. But once you get into the multimillionaire and billionaire class, from my understanding, and from what I have seen, is that you cannot really get to that point without the exploitation of labor, the exploitation of people lower to the ground. Biggest example is the Amazon warehouses. I don't know if their conditions have improved somewhat.
Not much.
Yeah. You know, you have 15-hour work shifts working in massive warehouses, to where you keep hearing stories of people having to urinate in plastic bottles and leaving that in the warehouse just to get their quota done. And if they don't get their quota done, they're massively reprimanded at best. By the way, I would like to hear this is a request from me to you, Cat Sabotage.
Sure.
Please have a Amazon warehouse worker on your show one of these days. I would love to hear your perspective and the actual truth of working in that place.
And I have been looking. So if you have things to say, if you did work at an Amazon warehouse, or if you are currently working at an Amazon warehouse, you don't need to identify yourself or identify which one or anything like that. Please do send me an email, solidarityspokane@kyrs.org.
Because otherwise you're going to have people like me who are getting stories that are probably rear-end derived, to put it very politely.
And for the lucky listeners that are actually listening to this After Hours addendum, we've had Soji Cat show up in addition to a Charlie Cat.
Oh my goodness, she's finally come up. Hello, I told you little sweetheart.
I told you she would. Isn't she little?
Yeah.
She's so tiny.
She's tiny. Yeah. So she kind of reminds me of my cat at home, like black calico like her.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, completely separate point. So yeah, exploitation of workers.
Gotta pause for cats.
Yeah. Gotta pause for cats. You gotta pause for any animal.
Pause.
Animal in your life. Yeah. A moment of silence.
For that terrible joke.
Well, granted, it took me a minute.
And then we actually paused, which is even better.
Yeah.
That went deep. That was multi-level.
Like, it takes a minute. Just keep this in mind. It takes a minute for a moment.
It takes... Yeah. It does. It does. It really does.
Not gonna lie, I just kind of made that up, but yeah, I guess it applies.
I like that quite a lot.
Yeah. I'll put it on a t-shirt. Heck, I know how to. But yeah, anyway, what was the point I was trying to make with billionaires and the exploitation of labor in the modern day American?
You can't get that much money.
Yeah, you can't get that much money without, you know, honestly sleazy tactics like that.
Correct.
And unless there is a way, a clear way, where you can get that much money without relying upon inheritance, without relying upon a empire that existed before you that you're building on, without help from everybody else, without exploitation of the labor force, like, I'd love to know.
Because
I'd like to own a jet.
Oh, well, who wouldn't? Yeah. But if everybody owned a jet, the world would definitely be screwed. And the sad part, too, about it is that there's no such thing as a self-made billionaire. Yeah. I mean, you can have an idea, and you can succeed in patenting that idea. You can succeed in developing an infrastructure to distribute that. Mm-hmm. Even that process, doing it completely by yourself, is ridiculous. You can't. You need HR managers. You need to hire people to do this, that, and the other thing. And you need you need to incorporate yourself. You need legal advice. You need all of these things. It takes far more than one person. One person cannot do that. And one person cannot do the work that's required to keep the wheels on that operation.
Well, strangely enough, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the importance of community. Because I don't think you can achieve that without a strong community around you, whether it's familial, friendly, or employees. Because I'd imagine with multimillionaires, billionaires, those that be with piles of money are able to get there with strong ties to a giant and generous support system. Yeah.
And, I mean, we all hear the self-made story over and over again, but seed capital is...
Small loan of $1 million.
Yeah, the small loan of $1 million. I mean, seed capital is real. And oftentimes the individuals that end up in these situations do have that support and that seed money. I mean, they were even doing this back in the 19th century when you had people talking about Andrew Carnegie as being self-made, and you had people talking, you know, working as a shoeshine boy for 5 cents. I mean, it's patented. It's just absurd. I can't think of another way to say it, but it's just absurd. And it's sold to us with the explicit intention of making you believe that that can be you. That the possibility exists in this country for you to do that. And the win, that's like winning the lottery. You too can go into any reputable 7-Eleven, your local neighborhood haunt, and get a lotto ticket and hit the jackpot with that one golden idea and leave all of this behind and live a fantastic life. And I still think and will always think that that's absurd.
You know, after taxes and retributions, after paying out your bills and to any other family member who also could benefit from that lottery ticket if you're kind. But, you know, to have a neutral opinion, I think you do have to be very smart and especially savage to be able to be one of those powers that be. But that is, thinking about it now, it is weird how we portray those with a lot of money to be paragons of our society.
Uh-huh.
To where this person has $50 million to spend every day and he manages to spend it all and isn't broke. Like, that's honestly amazing to me. But if that is seen as the goal for everybody, then actually, I don't even know what point I was trying to make with that. If that is the goal that is supposed to be for everybody, then where the heck do we start? If you can't start at, you know, working at 7-Eleven or working at McDonald's or working at the paper mill or working as a shoe shiner for a quarter a day and then eventually make multi-billion dollars in Carnegie Hall or have a giant steel industry that revolutionizes the entire American ecosystem.
Right.
Then where the heck do you start?
I mean, you can't. You have to have the COVID-19, the whole pandemic, which is a nice way to bring this all back around to where we started. Mm-hmm. You can't, because you have essential workers. You have jobs that need doing, and someone has to work them. And the way that we have organized our economy is that those people are essentially sentenced to poverty. We're saying that this job is necessary, and without it, our society doesn't function. And the people who do that job should be poor. Mm-hmm. I mean, but de facto, like with the way that we talk about wages and the way that we've structured our economy, that's it. You're not good enough for healthcare. You don't deserve an extra bedroom. You don't deserve a washer dryer in your unit. You don't deserve a garbage disposal. You don't deserve any of those things. Mm-hmm. And I cannot abide the idea that that is not remediable. Capable of remedy, that we cannot fix that.
You know what? Strangely enough, I do have a story about that. So, going back to people I live with, my family, my mother, in fact, she has been and still is a medical professional. She started out in radiology, from what I could remember, worked her butt off through all of college and university, gaining bachelor degrees and certifications in not only radiology, but also radiological tech, CT, and PET scanning. And she is currently a contract worker for the medical industry on the West Coast, primarily the West Coast of the United States. She is paid, depending on the contract, a lot of money to be a temporary worker at these hospitals. However, she has been working at this for decades, just about as long as I've been alive, if not longer. She has confided in me that she wanted to be a creative professional. She wanted to make art for a living for a while. She was also a track star when she was younger. Those goals kind of went down the toilet because she had two kids to take care of. And we were living outside of Austin, Texas at the time. Mm. Or no, this would have been Salt Lake City. So born in Salt Lake City.
That's where
to
I
a
am.
House. Yeah. Don't worry, fellas. We're not part of the LDS.
We are not. No.
Yeah.
No.
No, we're heathens.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I don't do the spirit of Joe Hill justice, except that I will say that, like Joe Hill, I would not be caught dead in Utah. Yep. Any longer. I tried to order a double gin and tonic down there, and a guy told me, "You're in God's country, brother." I will never forget that. I have very, very good friends that are very dear to me in Salt Lake City, Alan and Annette, and my family is there, so I will return for them and the natural beauty of the state. But as far as politics go, a little wonky.
Yeah, that's putting it very generously. But anyway, so back to my life story, cat sabotage, how rude. Yeah. So born in Salt Lake City, lived there until I was 2, my brother was 3, moved over to just outside of Austin, Texas, in the woods, in a shack, and we lived there until I was around about 7 or 8 years old. That's where my mother was working in the medical industry. My father was working as a carpenter. They divorced a few years into their marriage after we moved to Austin, Texas. Thankfully, still keep in contact. They're amicable today, so don't worry about that front. But even though she has been working in the medical industry in a very prestigious position as an essential worker, as a medical technician, as somebody who takes pictures of bones so everybody else in the hospital can figure out how to fix them, and then furthering that education to go into more imaging, to go into more diagnosis, and helping out with the hospital industry, still kind of live in poverty. Like, we have just recently become technically middle class. But that is because of the hard work of primarily one individual who is working her butt off in the medical industry every single day. My brother, who is working his butt off in the airport every single day hauling luggage. And myself, who is working in the bar industry, and we are all mutually supporting each other. That is the reality of today, as I understand it. That you cannot make an independent living without some sort of help.
Mutual aid.
Mutual aid.
And that's where I'm definitely going to chime in again, because that's exactly what we talk about, is that when you stand in solidarity and together with other people, you can go very far. We're taught that rugged individualism is what has made America great. And nothing could be farther from the truth. Standing alone for something is admirable, and it requires an immense amount of strength. But no matter what you do, if you set one man to building a wall with bricks and mortar, and you set 50 men to building that wall, 50 persons, let me say, and not just make this gendered here, but 50 persons to doing that, which wall is going to end up being bigger? You know? And
wall is going to be built.
Right. And furthermore, I would rather have the wall built by 50 than the wall built by one. I really do believe in the power of community and solidarity. And that's an incredibly inspiring story about your mother. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
And hey, dude, power to her always. Like, so before I go into too deep into that territory, which is probably a bit too personal for a radio show, I think there is a necessity for the rugged individual, the person who is, let's just use, you know, the old cowboy as an example, striding along on his horse with a big brim hat and everything he will ever need in his life on his belt. Like, there is a necessity for that to maybe be a pathfinder for everybody else. But again, that even that rugged individual cannot go far without the individual. He did not make his own belt. He did not make his own shirt. He did not birth his own horse.
Ah.
Yeah.
That would be a feat.
That would be a feat and a freak of nature. And, you know, there is some Greek myths that go into that, and they never end well.
No Greek myth ever.
No, not really. You know, the Minotaur. There you go.
Yeah, some of those Greek myths did end very sweetly, but some, most did not.
Yeah, but again, you have that individual who is able to go out ahead of everybody else because everybody else behind them is able to support them. At least that's the way I've always kind of seen it. But on the other hand, there is, I think, a need for individualism and independence, for self-thought, for self-creativity, for self-actualization?
Yeah.
If that's the right term?
I think it is.
But I do think that should be for the benefit of the community. And I'm not talking about the massive community of the entire United States or the entire world, the universe, the solar system. No, I mean your friend, the person you shake hands with every day, the person you walk by on your way to maybe grab a banana from the grocery store or your preferred breakfast choice. Or, you know, your coworker, the people you can see eye to eye, face to face on a daily basis. if you strive for rugged individualism, I think it, again, should be for the benefit of those people as well as yourself. So you can help everybody. And I think that should be the message of your show, shouldn't it? Says I, the guest.
It actually is so beautifully that I think that that's a great place to leave the addendum. Yeah. I think that's a fantastic message to leave on. If anybody from the show actually happened to wander into this addendum, thank you very much for joining us. We've just continued our conversation here in my living room with Charlie Cat and Soji Cat, who made an appearance. Oh, Charlie's asleep. He was lulled to sleep by the wonderful timbre of Jacob's radio voice.
The smooth jazz that is my voice.
Hey, and I might even play this addendum out with a little smooth jazz. Who even knows? But you've been listening to Solidarity Spokane Addendum. Thank you very much for joining us. You guys have a good day.